Hello, you're listening to the Burst Boss Scottish Football Podcast. We're on to episode, 253 now? Am I right in thinking? It's been a lot of episodes anyway, let's take a look here, We've got, Tom McKinnon and Lewis Burrell with me here to discuss, the kind of end of the league season, what's been happening in the league, and also with the national team as well. Tom McKinnon, how are you getting on?
Good. I'm slightly annoyed at the fact I've not got a ticket for the Scottish Premiership playoff on Sunday, but life goes on.
Life goes on. Did something in front of you buy 30,000 tickets? Yeah.
Yeah, it felt like that anyway.
the playoff, we will come on to discuss in more issue. And I suppose the ticketing, did I say farce? Is that the correct word we'll use for it? We'll come on and discuss it in more details and figure out the right terminology as well. I've also got Lewis Burrell with me. Lewis, how are you getting on? Long time no speak.
Hello, Gambit. How are you doing?
Yeah, getting there. Well, gents, the league season is done. Celtic winning the league, surprisingly. Rangers finishing second. And everyone at the bottom confirmed. Dundee relegated, St Mirren in the playoff. We're going to come and speak to about the playoffs soon. Tom, just to kind of start off, there's going to be quite a few managerial changes coming up. The first one, we know that Steve Clark not going to be the Kelly manager anymore. He's now taken up the Scotland job. This seems to be quite universally approved, and I've actually not seen much ill feeling from Kilmarnock fans. We will speak to one Kilmarnock fan in particular in a wee second, but in terms of the kind of overall appointment, you're kind of happy with that? How did you feel it went? Do you feel this maybe should have been the appointment a while ago? What's your hot take on the Steve Clark appointed as a Scotland manager?
I think he probably should have been appointed 15 months ago in Tyrone Cleish. I think most could have seen that probably wasn't going to work out, but looking forward to it now. I think it is a really good appointment. You see, he's done an absolutely brilliant job at Kilmarnock. The one concern I've got is it seems so similar to Craig Levine, but I would say Steve Clark. As much as it pains me to say this, I think Steve Clark is a far better manager than Craig Levine. But it is a competent appointment, which is something that I think I said when we were looking for a manager, something would be a good start. Which we haven't always shown in the past, and the SFA haven't shown in a lot of their decisions.
If
you look at the trend, if you look at the trend of what international football is now, it's a sort of eight teams that are really good in Europe, six to eight teams that are really good, and the rest have to be really well organised to get a result and get through into tournaments, and not just get into tournaments, but like Wales, like Northern Ireland, get through into the knockout stages. You don't have to have loads of good players. Okay, I understand that Wales have got two of the best players in the world, and Gareth Bale and Aaron Ramsey, two players that are probably better than our attackers anyway, but Northern Ireland don't. I would probably just about take out Scotland's strongest 11 over theirs, man for man. I think the one argument probably was Steve Davis, and I don't think he's really shown that much in the Premiership. And I think if you can get a manager who can organise a team, and we've got players in the forward lines that can hurt teams of a similar level, even probably teams that are maybe slightly better than us. But if you can get a manager that can set up a team to defend, counter when they need to, you can excel in the current international climate.
Lewis, is that kind of a similar opinion to yourself, or is there any? How did you feel about Clark being appointed?
Yeah, well, to an extent, I think anybody with any sense about them can only really mirror what Tom said there. I think it's definitely the right appointment, and it's one that the SFA should have been making months ago. Obviously, when they appointed Alex McLeish, we know that there was a bit of a farce run about it, about them chasing after Michael O'Neill, and I think the fact that, you know, it's all came down around them, hasn't it? The whole McLeish thing, and they've been forced to get rid of him. Aye, I know, wouldn't have known that, would we? It's all kind of came run about them, so I think, there'll have been crisis conversations in that SFA boardroom that they had to get this one right. I mean, they failed spectacularly and publicly, importantly, the last time, so that they absolutely had to get this one right. And I think anybody that I'd spoken to about it, I can't even remember if I'd said it in the podcast, I'd said that I think the crucial thing for the manager that they've just appointed there is that it was someone kind of on their way up in the game as opposed to somebody kind of going away back down. Steve Clarke, we all know, he's a brilliant career down in England as an assistant manager, as a coach, then he managed West Brom and Reading. But he's come up here and his managerial career looks to be stronger than it's ever been. He's a man in demand. He could have walked in within reason. He could have walked in any vacant job this summer. So yeah, I think they've definitely done the right thing by getting someone like that. But the initial quotes that you're hearing from him and his press conferences and stuff, doesn't seem like he's going to take any nonsense either. He seems far from being a SFA yes man and just another blazer. The stuff he was saying about retired players when you come to him and I'll be begging folk down and think, hopefully he can put an end to as many sort of call-offs as we get, because I think as much as Alex McLeish didn't do a great job, he very much had a hand tied behind his back because he had a lot of games in the international calendar with this Nations League that weren't there before. Players and clubs weren't really sure how to take to it. So naturally, he had a lot of call-offs, a lot of important call-offs as well. So hopefully Steve Clarke gives them something to buy into a wee bit more. Everybody's seen what he's done. They've seen what he's done in Scotland. He seems very happy, I thought, when you saw the clips of him and everything. He seems smiling away. He lets him get back down south to live with his family, because we all know that being a Scotland manager, whether you like it or not, that's quite often where they can be based down in England, pardon me, quite happily. So, yeah, I think it seems a very, very good fit for him. It seems a very good fit for the SFA. But as Tom says, there's always trepidation with Scotland managers because we've seen so many over the past who've come in with good pedigrees. Craig Levein was another one up and coming in the game. Thought, he'll go to Scotland, do well there, and it'll be a passport to the English Premiership or something for him. Didn't work out like that. So, yeah, unfortunately, if you look at the history, tells us that it won't work out well because very few Scotland managers ever do. But at the same, you look at it and you think it's the best he could have done. Exactly.
It's one I know. I've certainly been on the podcast in the past, saying that this is Steve Clarke's a guy that I admire quite a lot. I know we'll probably come on and talk about more managerial vacancies in a wee second. But he's someone that if he'd ended up getting the Celtic job, I would have been really, really happy with that. I wouldn't have been that disappointed if he'd gotten the Celtic job. So to see him in the Scotland job, I think he's probably the best appointment Scotland, probably could have done. Would be interesting to see if Bielsa became available, but I know we've spoken about that in the past. He has a bit of a... unpredictable, I suppose, is probably the words to use. I think Clarke, definitely a really good appointment, one of the probably best appointments we've seen for Scotland in a wee while. Hopefully it works out. Again, it'll be interesting to see with the qualification campaign that's upcoming if he can turn around the kind of traditional qualification campaign group, whether we'll be within qualifying through that route or whether he gets closer to it through the playoff route that we've qualified for. It'll be interesting to see. What's his first game? It's Cyprus, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Then it's Belgium.
Is that's away, isn't it?
Yeah, I might be there as well.
Despite
being the anti-Tartan army, I might actually have a ticket, which first ever Scotland away game would be... some experiences them get beat 6 or 7-0.
I think as Tom says though, just when you speak about them going to Belgium and things, as Tom was saying, that international football for the smaller countries now is all about being organised, being disciplined, taking your chance when it comes and everything. I think what we can see, especially for Steve Clarke's work with Kilmarnock, when they played Celtic and Rangers, they absolutely matched them in most occasions, especially at Rugby Park. So you would very much hope, and that he's got the credentials to turn Hampden back into a bit of a fortress. He could maybe even make us organised and competitive enough to go away from home and not feel like it's only a matter of time before we ship 4 or 5 goals. So, he might be the man to have us going to Belgium and keeping it tight,
It'll be interesting. Certainly from, Steve Clarke, Kilmarnock was one of the teams that, hated coming up against when Rodgers was in charge of Celtic. Because we beat them, twice, maybe?
Struggled at Rugby Park. They never looked good against them at Rugby Park.
No,
Celtic.
No, and I think the only one once at Rugby Park when he was a manager, and it was last minute deflected Scott Byrne winner, which everything you need to know really in that sentence.
I think the only team that actually kind of enjoyed playing against Steve Clarke's Kelly was Aberdeen. I think Aberdeen kind of had their number a wee bit, but another potential Scotland manager, of course, but except for that, there was absolutely nobody that liked the trip to Rugby Park, and that was testament to him, because it had become almost a wee bit of a happy hunting ground for teams in the years before.
But and also, I suppose that kind of that also that that Aberdeen Kilmarnock thing. That's just like, I mean, that's just like a, there's some supernatural shit going on with that. Like that was just there was something that kind of went beyond what a manager could do there. I mean, that was some weird shit with the amount of games that they'd won at Rugby Park and things like that. Anyway. should we speak to Callum Scott about his general opinions on Steve Clark and getting the Scotland job and leaving Kilmarnock? And obviously, I'll speak to him a wee bit also about the last game of the season. So I had a wee chat with Callum, and here it is now. And before I jump to that interview with Callum, it's just giving a wee message just to say my audio in this is a bit strange. I'm not entirely sure why, but it is strange. I do apologise for that. However, I know when Callum Scott's on the podcast, you aren't listening to whoever's talking to him, you're listening to him. I apologise for mine, but here's Callum giving his thoughts on the end of an era with his hero.
And as promised, I've got Callum Scott here with me. Callum, how are you getting on? I imagine a varied level of emotions that you have, given what's happened.
To quote the great man, my head's like a tumble dryer these last few days. As Steve Clark said himself last week when asked about the Scotland job before he was away. So yes, a very mixed range of emotions, to say the least, Gamba, yep.
I suppose we should start off with, I mean, there's three kind of ways to talk to, I mean, there's three kind of things I want to cover with you. It's how you feel about Stevie Clark leaving, who you think is going to be the successor, but also, because you're a Scotland fan, how you think he'll get on. Mm-hmm. But like, first of all, I'll just start talking to you about I'm leaving. People who listen to this podcast, who have listened to this in the past, they know my opinions on Steve Clark. You hold him in higher regard than I do. I'm leaving. What was the game against Rangers like? Can you just go through or just kind of general range of emotions? Because I know there's going to be quite a few things you're going to want to cover with it.
Well, there's so much to cover. Obviously, his speech was wonderful, but what I will say is, Judas kissed Jesus before he turned him into the Romans. Nah, of course I jest. Just absolute sensational. It was very, very much emotional. Just to do it in the manner we did, to beat Rangers. I think it was what we deserved. I know the penalty was a wee bit soft, but I still think it was a penalty. Like, the guy's got two hands over him. You see you see Barisic doesn't even complain, you know. As you see it back, and O'Donnell 100% makes the most of it, but it's a penalty. So to do it that, and I was sitting, I was, oh, here we go, and I thought the keeper had saved it at first, and I was just like, oh, Jesus, what's going to happen here? But nah, the ball hit the net, and it was just pure euphoria all around the ground. And then to hold on and see the game out, was brilliant. And then Clark comes on the pitch after it and addresses the three stands of Kelly fans, which is in itself was a proud moment for me, and again quite emotional as well, because for years and years people have said that we couldn't do it, Kelly have got no fans in that, whereas all season we've sold out away allocations. Ground after ground, we've sold out allocations. Mm-hmm. And then the home fans have steadily but surely started to come back. But Sunday was absolutely brilliant. Like my conspiracy theories, but they said there was 12,000 at the game, which I think is absolute nonsense. I don't know what they get out of lying. I don't think it's a tax thing. I know that was a thing back in the day, but I don't get what they get out of lying, because basically what they were trying to say is, I don't know if you've seen pictures yourself, Gamba, but they're basically trying to say they could have had a full stand and a half line empty and you would have still been able to fit everything into the ground. That's essentially what they're saying. They were saying there was 5,000-6,000 empty seats, which is just garbage. I'd say it was about 14,000 there, minimum. So it was just brilliant. Clark comes on after that, addresses the fans, and it's just, there was still one wee bit, I was convinced he was away, but just when he comes onto the pitch after the game, you're thinking, oh, maybe there's a chance he's got to stay, but Nah, we know just when he apologised for not ever being able to win a trophy that, that's him gone. That's him gone. So I would like to, if he's listening, that is, I would like to thank him for
good friend of the show.
Yeah, good friend of the show. I know he likes his podcasts, Chapel Trap House and Come Town as well. Steve Cartwright's listening to, so, but it was just, just what he's done at the club. I mean, I could talk all day about what he's done, and it's all the generic. Or he takes us for the bottom of the league, breaks record points 2 seasons in a row, European football for the first time in my generation. Really, I mean, I was 5 and a half the last time Kelly played in Europe against Viking Stavana. And 2001, so he's been able to give me something that I didn't think I'd see for years, and that's be able to go and watch Kelly in Europe. And before the listeners, oh, they've just got to get pumped up anyway, like, just got to get pumped with it. But doesn't matter for me. I mean, I'm just, it's something I didn't think I'd see, and I'll get to experience that with my dad and my friends, and nobody can take that away from us. So I'm just buzzing. As you can tell, my voice is a wee bit hoarse for all the singing I've been doing and the drinking since last Wednesday as well. So excuse the listeners for my crooked voice.
I'm sure we can forgive that. I mean, it's something that, you know, I'm sure Lewis and Tom and I, we will go on about Clark and think about that and talk about. I mean, certainly, kind of going to in terms of the charge of Scotland, you've watched most of them more than anyone else in the podcast in terms of his teams. Think you fit in at Scotland, or do you think Scotland's just such a basket case? Because I'm happy. I mean, you know my feelings on him. I would have really, really liked to have seen him as a Celtic manager. So, yeah. You know, I think he's a really good manager. It's just, do you think that what he's walking into, he can make it work, or what he'll do with that moment before, or how do you see it going?
I'd like to rebut a couple of kind of things that people have been saying as kind of arguments against Clark, like, not in a bad way, because they'll think he's brilliant, but most people say, oh, you see how Kilmarnock are lined up, it's drilled into them, you know what I mean? That's work that he needs to do day in, day out in the training pitch, whereas with Scotland, he's only seen the players maybe once a month or whatever, you know what I mean, after that. So, to rebut that, Clark was in the door less than a week, and we took points at Ibrox and Parkhead, you know what I mean? So, like, that shows that he can go and have an instant impact. Obviously, over time, the shape and stuff, like, is something that is really kind of drilled in and attention to detail, but I don't doubt for a minute that he'll still be able to implement that at Scotland. As I say, he's first two games in the job, 4 days apart. We go and draw with Rangers at Ibrox and then draw with Celtic at Parkhead, coming for a goal down both times as well. So, like, I don't doubt that he's got to go and get an instant impact. I think that it's a wonderful appointment for a Scotland point of view. Disappointing for me, obviously, because it's just, obviously, MD, any fans of the Diddy clubs listening here know that whenever you kind of rear your ugly head above anything, they're quick to put it back down and take everything away for you, and that's what happens anytime we get a really, really good player. Malumbo last year, there, Celtic take him, Eremenko in the past, there, teams want him, you know what I mean? It's just, Kilmarnock's always, as painful as it is, Kilmarnock's always just something as a stepping stone to most people, and that is disappointing. I don't mean that to devalue Clark, because the only reason Clark was at Kilmarnock is because he got affection for the club, but it's just, it's painful as it is, like, it means the world to us, but to a lot of people at Disney, you know what I mean? So they're always going to have a bigger move than Kilmarnock. And unfortunately, Steve Clark has left us. And when we started to look like we could really kind of do something special, it'll be hard to. I would have just loved to have seen him take us into Europe. I would have absolutely loved it. I would have loved to have a good go at it and see what would happen next year again and try and challenge Old Firm. Mm-hmm. But we'll see what happens. I suppose that's up to the next man to come in. But I just think that it's a brilliant appointment for Scotland, and even the way I was just talking to some of my mates are Celtic fans and stuff, and the positivity already that he's in, and you believe what he says. What did he say yesterday about we've dropped points that we shouldn't have, i.e. against Kazakhstan, they are points we have to make up. So we go to Belgium and Cyprus. Cyprus, isn't it? shows how little I've been caring about Scotland recently. Cyprus at home, then away to Belgium. And he's saying that's, we need to take 4 points for that. So, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's... It's positivity, whereas other managers before would just say that. So he fully believes it and go and take points off of Belgium, which I think is only a good thing for Scotland. And I wholeheartedly believe that Steve Clarke will take us into Euro 2020. I'm not sure if it cut out there, sorry.
Now, obviously, the way the merry-go-round works, Scotland have got a very good manager from Kilmarnock.
Yep.
Now need a manager.
Yep. So, Gary, you want me to throw some names in?
I was going to say, Gary Holt's the main one that's going to be thrown about that I've heard.
That's from
an outsider looking in and maybe not seen as much of the coverage that you have, and also not with the same contacts I have that you have. What do you think?
Straight away, I can wholeheartedly say, I know I just said that, that Gary Holt will not be the next Kilmarnock manager. It's my understanding that he's not in the running for the job. Whether that is because he knows that he won't get it, or because he's a Kilmarnock fan, he's Kilmarnock through and through, and it kind of looks like the obvious choice, but the board clearly want to go in a different direction, and I don't think... I'd be very, very, very surprised. I've heard from people already that Gary Holt will not be in the running for the job, and I take their word for that. When I was speaking about this recently, like the other week there, I suggested Paul Clement, and that one's kind of gathered a wee bit of momentum in social media. I need to get my shout there. I'm not saying it's all down to me, but I think that I was literally the first person to suggest them. And now it's got a few people talking. And I put it in the forums as well, saying that I was the first one to say that I would worth looking at Paul Clement. The reason I went for him is that I think that he's cut for a similar cloth as Clarke in regards to he's got unbelievable coaching experience. You know, this guy's Ancelotti's assistant manager at Bayern Munich, Chelsea, Real Madrid. Like, it's ridiculous. Obviously, he's not had a great time as a number one. I think he did a good job at Derby and he was kind of harshly treated. No, I think he left Derby to go to Swansea. I can't quite remember, but I know he's not been great. I think he did okay at Derby, and then Swansea are a bit of a basket case, and I think that's all for all to see just now. And then it kind of never really worked out at Reading, so... And Stevie Clarke never worked out at Reading either, and then he comes up here and does well. So off the top of my head, I'd say Paul Clement would be a good shout. It'll not be a popular one amongst Kilmarnock fans here, but I would, if Neil Lennon is not, does not get the Celtic job, I would absolutely take Neil Lennon, there's no doubt about that. I think the guy's a brilliant manager, he's somebody that cares about every club he's at, he fights their corner, I think that's exactly what we need, so I would be delighted to sound him out, but I do believe they probably will be Celtic manager. Other than that, it is a tough one. I don't see any kind of Scottish candidates standing out, which isn't a bad thing, to be fair. Before, we would be kind of... One thing that's got to be said is the Kilmarnock job is as attractive as it ever has been. So people will look up here and think, hey, there's a chance I can go and rebuild my career. Look at Steve Clarke, look at Brendan Rodgers, even Mark Warburton originally at Rangers, you know what I mean? Like, so Heckenbottom doing well at Hibs, it's an attractive place now for managers to come up. Mm-hmm. And try to rebuild their careers. But equally, I would like us to look abroad as well. And I know it's easy saying, oh, just get a foreigner in. But it's not my job to go out and recruit a manager for Kilmarnock. That's Billy Bowie's job, and I'm sure they're undertaking that as we speak. But, like, surely we've got to be looking at guys who have maybe got a record in Norway, Finland, Sweden, whatever, who have got some kind of record doing well with provincial clubs, you know what I mean? These are countries, and I'm not saying for 1 minute Kilmarnock should be looking for somebody to go and win as the league before my words get twisted here, but you've got to look at guys in these countries who have broken the mould, who have went and won leagues with provincial clubs, you know what I mean? Ronnie Dyler did in Norway, you know what I mean? He took a relegation a relegation certainty into league winners, you know what I mean? Like, guys, I'm not particularly saying Ronnie Dyler, but there's good coaches out there. Valeraki or Valkari, I can't remember his name, used to play with Motherwell. He was in for the job before. He's coaching in Finland. He's got quite a good CV. I think it's Valkari. It's Simo Valkari or something like that. But there's guys out there, and I don't doubt that the board will do their best. But off the top of my head, Paul Clement, Neil Lennon and Gary Rowett's been linked as well. I'd be happy with either of these guys, so we'll see what's what. But we've got to keep going ambitious, that's what I say.
Interesting, interesting. Callum Scott, I think that's everything I wanted to ask you, so thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate I've not been on the podcast in a while, so happy I've been able to air my thoughts, so thanks very much, Gamba.
No, at all.
Right, so Callum Scott, who I'm sure will be fancying at having led Grange Amateurs to a double in their first season. I'm sure he'll be down for the Kelly job.
May as well.
Managerial vacancies, boys. There appears to be quite a few. Obviously, the Scotland one has been filled, but that has left a void at Kilmarnock. Spoke to Callum a wee bit there about who he'd kind of want to see, but I mean, we've got what? Kilmarnock, there's a vacancy. Dundee, we've got a vacancy. Celtic, there might be a vacancy, although I think if the cup final goes in Celtic's favour, I don't think there will be. I think that'll be Lennon's full time. Tom, with your knowledge of the East Coast and Dundee and things like that, we probably should talk about Dundee. The vacancy there, McIntyre gone, and I was reading Inverness told Dundee where to get to, speaking for John Robertson. What's kind of, if you can give us a wee kind of timeline, what's happened, what you think is going to happen, what the fuck's going on, basically, is what I'm trying to figure out.
Yeah. Well, the phrase, your guess is as good as mine, Gamba, might ring true in this scenario. But I think, to go to the basic of the timeline, McPeak took interim charge, has been looking after the youths and is very highly thought of at the club. I think he's made it clear he's not going to take it and he's happy to stay in his role. I think that's probably fair.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was signs of fight on Saturday. Yeah, Saturday against St Mirren. But if your team can't show signs of fight under a popular manager last day of the season at a stadium that you've won 12 times in 3 seasons, then I think there's probably a good reason that they are where they are. But and then since, there's been quite a few names linked. A lot of them tend to have Dundee connections. But the first real concrete outcome we've had was that they've asked John Robertson, or they've asked permission to speak to John Robertson, which was denied. Fair enough, he's done really quite a good job at Inverness. I'm not sure if the Dundee job would be that much more appealing. I think you would get a bigger budget, and there would be different.
Bear in mind, Dundee have a massive budget. Did Dundee not budget for top 6?
Yeah, they have in the past. Obviously, they'll be budgeting for higher than top 6 next season in the Championship. but no, I just don't think if you were John Robertson or Inverness, that it would be particularly a good move, because there'd be a considerable amount of pressure. I think you get off to a bad start. He's not a legend at the club. He's not like he would be at Hearts. He might struggle, and there are very, very few players signed on for next season at Dundee as well, so it's a big job. Then the next name that was linked, funnily enough, as season tickets are being sold, is Gordon Strachan, but not as a manager, as a technical director, which I'm not sure about. I didn't particularly like him at Scotland. I know some people did. Would be quite high-profile appointment, probably as high-profile Dundee could get. And then this morning we're hearing that they've asked permission to speak to Jim Goodwin, which I think would be a good appointment, something I would have gone for first straight off the bat if it wasn't for John Elms's fanciful criteria that you've had to manage 300 games with a winning percentage of 40%, which doesn't seem like a lot, but if you can get 40% over 300 games, you're generally going to be quite a successful manager. I don't even think Steve Clarke's got that. Potentially right in thinking he's definitely around it. But the worrying thing from that all is that those three names, there's no clear plan there. They're particularly the two managers are very different. Goodwin's quite an adaptive manager, but you can tell he wants to play football, and that would probably be more accessible at Dundee with better player or a bigger budget anyway, maybe not necessarily better players at the moment, but you'd have to trust Goodwin would get a good squad of players there. Whereas Robertson, obviously, has done really well this season, tends to play more physical. Sorry, Johnny Clark, I know you like to think Inverness are a reincarnation of Barcelona 2008, but...
I don't think they're quite as physical as you make out, to be fair.
But you do look at the 11 to 15 names that play regularly, and they are all big guys. They do play all right football. I'm not saying they play bad football.
They're a big team, but they play decent football.
But my point really remains is that Goodwin and Robertson are different managers. And you'd think for Dundee, this could be a clean slate. The relationship with the fans isn't good at all. If they can get a manager here that could galvanise a club like Jack Ross at St Mirren, someone who they ironically tried to get before McCann, which you just think if an alternative universe, Dundee are going for Europe at the moment with Scotland's next best thing, our next big thing manager, but instead they're scrambling about trying to get any up-and-coming manager they can. But it does reek of just a general malaise around the club. I do think the problems aren't going to be immediately sorted by if they get a good manager like Goodwin or even Robertson or, God forbid, Gordon Strachan. But there is a person who I've mentioned already in this podcast, and I think he's probably the person I would be looking to get rid of rather than some high-profile manager.
You can read into that what you will. And Lewis, what would your opinion on Dundee be? I mean, in terms of Goodwin would be huge, wouldn't it? I mean, you think it's feasible?
Well, I think Tom had them fairly well covered there, and what he said about there being a malaise at the club, I can only echo that statement. You know that the players that they sign every summer, and they all seem to carry quite a kind of big squad as well, and it seems that, I mean, they do have quite a big budget, and you know, they shouldn't really have been in relegation trouble. I mean, you look at the team and some of them aren't great, but with the money they actually have, they're not a team that should even be around relegation in the Premiership. Now they find themselves back down at the Championship, and they've just never seemed, any time they got up, it's like they always do really well and got up, and then they just never seem to get a real solid foot in the top flight. You know, they're a bit of a yo-yo club, and yeah, I think as Tom says, it does almost strike you that there's a wee bit of a malaise around the place, and that there's maybe issues beyond just simply a change of manager that need to address that. But Tom's saying that a new manager will come in and they've got not a lot of players, but it could work in their favour. They might have got rid of a few bad apples and maybe bring in a whole new... We saw it at Motherwell even a few years ago there when we to turn the whole team about. And it can bring a real freshness about the place and a real sort of team spirit. And because in the fact that they're going to be one of the teams with a bigger budget in that league next year and they'll be going for promotion, I think that can only be a good thing for them. I'm unsure as to... they should go for the manager. There have been a few times now Dundee been sort of the managerial merry-go-round type thing of Scottish football. You know, could they be better trying to get down and pluck somebody for the National League or something down south, tell them to come up with a good budget, a team going for promotion? Because I think to somebody like that who's maybe managing a part-time team down in England or something, say, or even a team that are full-time but maybe don't have the finances in a league where you're not Salford's now, but with well-funded teams that can't got up and out the National League but have maybe got up out the division, the regionalised ones before it or something, I think maybe something like that would be a good shout for Dundee. Just something a wee bit different, completely freshen the place up. No sort of obvious choice for the Scottish football merry-go-round.
They did have a real chance when they relegated Dundee United at Dens to really galvanise the city. They spoke a lot at the time of the children growing up will become Dundee fans, and there was potential for that. They could have really built on that, really used that to their advantage, and as we've seen, Dundee United have really struggled to get up, and there's no guarantee they're going to get up this season, but there's a chance there to really stamp their authority as the city's big club. But the mismanagement, not just of the players but above that, has shown that they just couldn't kick on. That was their best chance. They're probably not going to have that chance to be clearly Dundee's big club for at least two or three seasons, you'd imagine now, even if Dundee United stay down. And it just feels like an opportunity slipped through their hands, and they've not even really attempted to grasp it. They had some good players, a youth academy that does produce players for the first team, like Cammy Kerr, who could have been a symbol of hope, and then some smart appointments on the pitch, a manager, maybe a different chief executive, and they could have been what Duncan Kamara are doing just now if they'd got a competent manager in through this whole period, and rather than taking a risk on someone like McCann and then trying to just totally change it with a completely different manager like Jim McIntyre and a whole different squad of players. That last season just shows how poorly run they've been. It was just the sort of hopefully for Dundee the climax of their shocking few years, really, when they could have been in the totally opposite direction with one, maybe even two clever appointments, but they just continue to get it wrong. And I wouldn't have total faith just because they've gone for two of the sort of it managers in Scotland and Robertson and Goodwin that they would get it right, because as I said, there is a bit of a malaise from the fans right the way through the club.
It's gonna be an interesting one. Do you think you kind of spoke about the kind of infamous derby, Dens. Just briefly to kind of touch on the kind of end of the end of the season. St Mirren winning at Dens, not enough to stave off the relegation playoff that they have. It's quite. I was thinking back to 2014 when both of the two, when Hamilton and Dundee were both promoted to the division. It's interesting to see how Hamilton have kind of just held on kind of every season apart from their kind of first season that they were in the division, when Alex Neil just decided, we're just going to just wreck everyone and probably go for the league, and then decided to go down to Norwich. They have kind of held on every season. It has been more consistent after Neil left, I thought. Whereas Dundee, it has been a bit more tumultuous. it's been interesting.
Like,
even yo-yoing through the division, it's been interesting. Mm-hmm. Just the contrast that Hamilton have kind of stayed where they are, but stayed in the league, right above the relegation spot, whereas opposed to Dundee, who have kind of fluctuated quite a bit. Sorry, Lewis, you were going to make a point there.
No, I was just about to say that, though, I think for all the slating that Hamilton get about their football and their poor home crowd and all that, I think we always overlook the fact that they're a tremendously run club. You know, they've got a... They know exactly what they are. I mean, in reality, Hamilton are probably a... If you're looking in terms of size, they're probably like a lower championship, good League One team, something like that, maybe. They know that they are punching above their weight where they are, but they don't take it in any way for granted. I mean, they've got a structure in place with their youth development and the way they rent out their stadium and make money to rent out parts of their stadium to businesses and make money that way. And they were one of the first teams to get the AstroTurf pitch down. I mean, there's teams training in Hamilton's pitch every night of the week. Obviously, the youth development players into the team as well. I mean, Hamilton are set up absolutely brilliant. I mean, they're run with an iron rod, obviously, except for the Nigerian Prince incident, but aside for that, Hamilton have run with an absolute iron road.
Well, the fact that they can do that and stay in the division is quite impressive as
well.
Yeah,
exactly. I think that's maybe the difference. I think that's the difference between the likes of them and Dundee, though. You know, Hamilton are just so well run, and they're so well set up that they can kind of stabilise themselves and they can stay up every year, whereas Dundee, for all that they might have more money, better players, more resources and everything, they seem a wee bit of a shambles.
I mean, it was just something. Again, I was just thinking about going back to that 2014. Something the playoff and the kind of final day with the 10-2 against Morton and things like that. It was just an interesting, just kind of parallels and kind of ways of looking at the two clubs where they are now and things like that. Anyway, we want to talk about the Celtic vacancy, or is it probably best to do that after the cup final? How tied do you think it's going to be to the cup final? I don't think it is anymore. I think it's a done deal. I think Lennon's going to be the manager.
Do you think so?
Next season,
If Hearts win, here's your new manager who lost the treble, Neil Lennon in charge.
I don't know.
There's no way they could do that, I don't think.
I think if they were going to get a new manager in, I think we would know pretty much for sure now. And the fact there hasn't really been much in the press just now is quite interesting, I think.
Yeah, I do agree.
That's the thing, because the only stories you're hearing are Slaven Bilic is interested in the job. Rafa Benitez is the bookie's favourite. There's nothing concrete coming out saying, the Celtic board are looking at David Moyes and they seriously fancy him. The fact that there hasn't been anything like that yet is a wee bit, I don't want to say worrying, but it's kind of cementing this idea in my head that Lennon is going to be the manager next season. It's not really who I would like to see, but I don't really think there's... The style of football certainly hasn't been the greatest. Defensively, they've been a wee bit better, but the game at Ibrox was an absolute farce. Game at home against Livingston wasn't great. Game away to Dundee. We've spoken about Dundee already. The fact they took a last-minute winner from, you know, a man who we had to shell out as much as we did for Edward to get a last-minute winner at Dens wasn't the greatest. Last-minute winners at Hearts and things like that. I think it's going to be a long season next season with Lennon in charge, and yeah, that's why I renewed my season ticket the day it went up. Anyway, what do you think, Tom? Do you think it's a kind of done thing, or do you think it hinges on the cup final?
I think it probably does, but I think you're right about the sort of media silence. You think if there was someone close, and if we're led to believe it will be the Monday after the cup final, then someone has to be close, and if we're not being told who it is, it's going to be someone maybe quite high profile in total left field, or incredibly more likely I think it'll be Lennon. I think it's the hope that it's maybe Benitez.
I think the Benitez stuff is maybe out of hope more than anything, or it's maybe his agent trying to say, look, I mean, you could go somewhere else, you know, Celtic. Look, they're offering them decent money. Yeah. Why won't you, Mike Ashley? And it's like, I don't offer anyone decent money. I'm Mike Ashley, you know, like, I just don't. Anyway. Sorry, Tom, on you go.
Yeah, just, that was my thing. Well, I say it was my thing. I was speaking to my pal about it. He's a big Celtic fan. And he's a season ticket holder as well. But he was saying, I think he's in a very similar sort of mindset as you, in that it thinks it probably will be Lennon, but I think it could be quite a hard announcement to make if they do get beat by Hearts. As I said, we've just lost the treble with an interim manager, so here he is as your full-time manager. I almost think Lennon might be better placed leaving it, because if he doesn't get it now, it might lead to a wee bit of a scramble from the Celtic board, and the manager they get in, if he doesn't work, I think Lennon will once again get the interim manager, and chances are he'll probably do all right again. I think from that position he could well go on and be a legitimate candidate for the full-time job, but I can understand why Lennon wouldn't want that. He can see the job now, and all he needs to do is beat a really quite poor Hearts side in the cup final. I understand he's not got the best recent record against Hearts, but that was with a Hibs side, not the Celtic team, but I could understand why the Celtic fans would be happy with him. But as you said, it does look like all roads lead to Neil Lennon.
Yeah, Lewis, is it kind of similar for yourself? Is that how you see things playing out, or do you see it playing out? Definitely. Are we gonna be welcoming Davy Moyes on the Celtic way next season?
Well, obviously, I've got a lot of pals that are Celtic fans, and everything, just the area I live in, it's quite a big kind of Celtic place, and I think that the feeling, I don't think Neil Lennon would be taken very well if he was appointed as Celtic manager. What I think a lot of people forget is that Neil Lennon's last time at Celtic, I think it was always looked back on as Neil Lennon was a decent Celtic manager, and I think that's fair enough, but in his last season there, domestically, they were pretty poor, and domestically, under Lennon's strength as Celtic manager was more the European nights and the last 16 of the Champions League and the Barcelona game and stuff like that. Domestically at the time, Celtic were actually quite average. And speaking as a supporter of a provincial club, I thought Celtic were quite get-attable the last time. If Celtic were coming to Fir Park or whatever, and you knew that Motherwell were going to have a right good day, the chances are you would actually get something out of the game, you know, which for a team with the resources that Celtic have got, probably isn't the way it should be for the likes of other teams in the league. But no, I think Celtic fans would be very, very disappointed if Neil Lennon got the job, regardless if he wins this treble or not. I think if they win the treble, it should be, thanks very much, Neil, you've done well, you're an icon, all the rest of it. maybe keep him on in the background if that's something that he would be happy to do or whatever. But then I think they should be going on to get a new man. And Lennon being a big Celtic man, as he proclaims himself, I think he should see that if that's the route Celtic wanted to go down, using him as a sort of stepping stone, get them over the line for this treble, and then moving on to someone else, I think he should be understanding that. With Rangers, while Rangers still aren't great, it's not kid on, they are definitely improving, they're pumping money into it. And I think Celtic's quickest way of sort of equalising the whole sort of Old Firm run into the title thing would be to appoint Neil Lennon as manager. I think you appoint him as manager and you're going to see a real title fight next year, because the old Firm games especially now seems to be at a stage where Celtic dominate them at Parkhead and Rangers dominate them at Ibrox. So it's already starting to ever so slightly get back to sort of more even keel again. With the big rebuilding job that's to be done in the summer as well, I don't deny that when Lennon was at Celtic the last time, it was him that brought in guys like Ledley, guys like Van Dijk, of course, as well. It was Newt Kyle. It was Lennon that brought in people like this, and obviously Celtic punted these guys on for lots of money, Hooper as well. So I don't deny that with a rebuilding job in place, it might be seen as a slightly safe decision from the Celtic board to hand them the reins for next season, but I think you've got to look at where they want to go domestically, and you know they're in a situation where they need big investment this summer. They need to get something new. I mean, it seems like their sort of phase has now passed of the players they've got. They need something new. They need to drive forward the Rangers again next year. And is going back to Neil Lennon and giving him the job permanently really the way to do that?
Yeah, I'm honestly not entirely sure. I think it'll be a long season next year. Part of the other reason I think it will be Lennon is because of the rebuilding job that's going to have to be done over the summer. It's confirmed Boyata's away. There's going to be a lot of guys who are on loan signings that are going back. I know there was quite a lot made about, you know, Marvin Compher getting his winner's medal. And you were going through that squad and you were thinking, you guys that just haven't turned up at all that season and, like, probably won't feature again next year. And you're looking at them going, like, there's, like, Arnzani. I think that's another 12 months Celtic have got him on loan. I think it was an 18-month loan they got him for. Right. It's just, like, probably not going to see him. Marvin Compher, obviously. I mean, Aboue Kouassi, I don't think has featured, maybe once or twice this season. Maybe. I think it started at Tynecastle. Lost 1-0. Kyle Lafferty was still playing for Hearts. That's how long ago that was.
They've got a big kind of bloated squad, don't they? And somebody needs to streamline it but get genuine quality in place of it this summer.
Yeah, it's that way where if they're going to be appointing Lennon as a manager, does that kind of point to an overall thing where maybe they'll be looking to downsize a wee bit? Who knows? Who knows? Peter Lawwell, that's who knows. It'll be interesting to see how it goes. It'll be interesting to see. final vacancy. Kilmarnock, I suppose.
It's a sort of tough one, Kilmarnock, really. I would, after having relative success with Lee Clark and then brilliant success, obviously, with Steve Clark, I would find it hard not to see them go back down the route of a sort of a slightly big name, I say, with inverted commas, manager from down in England, who's maybe had a couple of sort of hard done by jobs down there, is maybe just a wee bit out of favour, getting him up, let him put himself in the spotlight here against big teams on the telly, and then punt back down. It's the same as players, you know, bring them up, develop them, and put them in a short window, put them back down the road. I think Kilmarnock have had quite good success doing that with English lower league managers in the last couple of years. It'll be attractive. I think any sort of English based manager that Kilmarnock reach out to, I think they would definitely pick up the phone, even if they don't take a job. I think they would certainly entertain it, because, you know, it's propelled Steve Clark onto good things, propelled Lee Clark onto half-decent things as well. So, yeah, I would be surprised if they didn't go back down that route. I know Gary Holt is in his favourite, and obviously he's got a big Kilmarnock background, he's a Kilmarnock supporter and everything. That wouldn't be a bad shout either. You look at the job he's done with Livingston, but you feel after coming off the back of somebody like Steve Clark, Kilmarnock will be thinking, right, let's go and do the same again, let's go down and get another guy up and put him in the short window.
Tom, is that how you see things going?
Yeah. Just when you were saying that, going through that criteria, obviously it's kind of been maybe not forgotten, but they do now need a manager. I think it's out with the sort of Killy fans. I think that's maybe been slightly forgotten. Kind of forgotten they did need one anyway. Maybe I'm just speaking for myself and my ignorance, but when you were going through that criteria there, Lewis, the name that screamed out to me was Guy Rowett.
Yeah, definitely.
A similar sort of managerial profile, with the exception of West Brom, to Steve Clark. Maybe a bit more experience in the lower leagues, but maybe not had that quite that same success. I don't think he was much of an assistant manager, but he's been really highly thought of across England, and has had a couple of... maybe not quite there at clubs, maybe the connection wasn't right, and you think he could be quite a good appointment. I think he's similar, he's not the most adventurous manager, he tends to build from the back rather than go all out to start with anyway. Could be quite a good appointment for Kilmarnock. Gary Holt as well, as you've said, just all I would say is just don't appoint Ali McCoist. A very very likeable person, very funny, very good on the radio, but as a manager in 2019 of a very good Kilmarnock side, I don't think that's the right appointment. I think that's maybe just the fact that he was on BT Sport and he didn't say he didn't want the job. I think that's probably where that's come from. But I think if they can get anyone of Gary Rowett's standard, even Gary Holt's class, I think they'll probably find it. The only problem is, do they go up from here? I suppose if they win a trophy and even stay up, that would be quite a good thing for Killy, a different sort of success, and I think they do deserve it after the sort of barren years they had, or the barren few seasons they had before Clark.
We've certainly covered the managerial vacancies that we know of, certainly at the moment in the Premiership. Are there any others that we've got to cover, boys, or have we kind of gone everything?
I think that's about us, eh, in terms of vacancies.
Right, We should move on. Tom, our teams of the year, I believe.
Yes, I thought this would be a nice feature. I'm not always sure how they work, but I think we've got three experts of the audio-only platform. So the criteria here is a team of the season, so 11 players from across the top four divisions, although saying that, I've not got a single player from League 2 in my team, purely because I haven't watched any League 2 this season, and I've watched quite a lot of Championship League 1, so I thought, stay loyal to my brand, try to get as many of those guys in, and I think this is a good team. I think this team would trouble Celtic next season, trouble Rangers next season, it's that good. But what I would like to do is I'd like to ask Lewis Burrell, I'd like to hear yours first.
My whole team?
Mm-hmm.
Right, I was struggling to do my whole team because to let the listeners know, when Tom suggested this idea to us, he said a team of the season from across all four leagues. I thought he meant me to say a team as in Celtic, Motherwell or something like that. So I've been sitting there all morning thinking about Albion Rovers and thinking what to say about them and all the rest of it. So I've been ever so slightly making this off the cuff. So I'll give a few and then...
Would you like me to go first and so we can get your whole team at one point?
Right, I only go.
Right, okay. Well, I've gone for Livingston's Liam Kelly. Brilliant first three quarters of the season. Tailed off a bit in the second half, or the second quarter even. Second quarter, fourth quarter even. Once safety was guaranteed, although we said that from about October, that they were safe. Also got Halkett in my defence. Pretty much the same reasons. I think he's probably could have got a better club than Hearts. No offence to Hearts. I do think he is a Scotland international, maybe even a regular Scotland international, hopefully. I think he is that good. And after me saying all these lower league players in my back five is 80% Premiership players, I've got James Tavernier in a right back. I like him a lot. Good goal scoring record. Stuart Finlay from Killy. I did have Benkovic in here, just because I maybe not in terms of great. I think he has had a good season, but I think he's on track to be the player that will come closest to Andy Robertson, and Van Dijk is the best player we've seen in Scotland. I think he is that good. And my other centre half is Thomas O'Brien from Arbroath, the best player outside of the top two divisions in Scotland. Such a calm defender. Can stay at Arbroath next season, have a shot at Championship. Or he could go to even Dundee or something like that if he really wants to. He's really good, really, really good centre half, brilliant in there as well. Midfield four. So normally when you see a team of the season, they're quite poorly balanced, as we might find out in a second, Gamba. but this team, this is an efficient, well-balanced 4-4-2. It's got creativity, it's got drive. As I said, this team would challenge most in Scotland. I think I'd be putting this, 70 points in the Scottish Premiership. I've gone for Hasty. I think he's had two brilliant halves of the season, making one brilliant hole. Amazing at Alloa. I've seen loads at Alloa. He's such a good player. And then I thought Motherwell needed to bring him back. Did not envisage him having this sort of impact that he did. And then to earn his move to Rangers and to annoy the Motherwell fans as much as he did, I think that's absolutely brilliant.
Not annoyed me. I've got
one in a million, Lewis. We've got Ryan Kent on the other wing, a really good player. I think Jared spoke about trying to get back on loan for the season, or he definitely said he's trying to get back for a year anyway, which doesn't sound like he's going to sign him. Maybe not be able to afford him, but I think he's been brilliant this season. And then the other two midfielders, Callum McGregor, have to have a Celtic player in there, or the Burstball overlords will be unhappy. I did want to put Forrest in, but I preferred Kent and Hasty. I'd imagine he might be in other people's teams, and rightly so. I think he's some of his best player in Scotland this season. And I've gone David Turnbull, partnering him. Incredible end to the season, so many goals. And speaking of goals, my front two, Alfredo Morelos, who will be a bit controversial, but really quite an interesting player to watch. I think everyone can agree on that. If he stays in Scotland next season and can sort his head, he'll probably get 30 goals like my other, and try and replicate my other striker, Stephen Dobby. I think probably the best player in Scotland this season, the best individual performance I've seen probably just about ever in my life was against, I don't understand, it was against a part-time side who were incredibly tired in Montrose, but my goodness, in a such an important game like a championship playoff semi-final, he just stepped up and strolled it. He just decided, I'm not playing League One next season. And that's exactly what he's not going to be doing, because he's just, I understand, and it's run out of superlatives for him, because we've been saying all season he's too good for the championship, but days like that, you really, really understand why. So he would be my captain and star player for this side. Gamba, have you got an 11?
I do. Some of them are quite similar to yourself. I've got Kelly in goal. I've got Stephen Dobby up front. I'll start from the front. I'll go back. I mean, Morelos. I've got Morelos up front, Stephen Dobby, but I've also got an extra striker in there, and I've got Lord Shankland in there. Mainly based on kind of a lot of the early season form, because he was absolutely incredible at the start of the season, and I think if he hadn't been firing as hot as he was, I don't think he would have been in the position that they ended up in this season. You know, an absolutely incredible season for Man United, and I think he was quite a big part of that. My midfield, as we've discussed, is possibly not the best balanced midfield. I've got James Forrest playing out wide right, who was my player of the season, certainly for Celtic, and because I watch Celtic every week, you know, across the league. I thought, you know, everything he contributed this season, his goals, incredible, the amount of important assists and things like that he was involved in across the whole season, you know, thought he was absolutely fantastic. And I mean, I know we shouldn't count this, but in terms of his Scotland performances as well, my God, you know, Steve Clarke maybe wouldn't have a wee glimmer of hope of qualifying for the European Championships if he wasn't as incredible as he was, certainly against Albania and Israel. Got Callum McGregor, I think he possibly would have also been my player, would have been another player of the season if Forrest hadn't quite been firing us hot. I thought it was very good. I've thrown Alan Power in there in the midfield to make up my midfield three. I probably should throw an extra. He's going to have to do quite a bit of work, but he's good enough to do it. He's good enough to do it, certainly from all, certainly from everything I've seen of him, and certainly from what Callum Scott's been telling me. He's my main man in there. Should I sacrifice a defender to throw Scott Brown in there? I I don't know because I don't. Part of the reason I'm thinking about putting Scott Brown as there is because, well, it's either Brown or no. Nah, actually, not. You know what? Tavernier right back, for the reasons you've described. Craig Halkett, mainly because the early stuff that I certainly saw of Livingston, he was the kind of one of your main men in the defence there, and it kind of reminded me of the kind of, you know, just great teams you would see that would just sit in and defend. And these guys, well, him especially, the back three at Livingston, I thought that he was the kind of, certainly a standout for myself, but he was, you know, your main kind of man, kind of leading everything. Maybe you're kind of Diego Godin-esque. Again, because I watch a lot of them, I've put Chris Fryer in my team. I think Celtic's defensive liabilities kind of stopped when he was playing a lot more in the team. I don't think it's a coincidence. I think Celtic kind of got a bit better when he was thrown into the team, and it maybe wasn't as much of relying on guys like Boyata and Semenovic, people like that. He kind of stepped in. And the fact he's only, what, like 20, 21? Is quite incredible. It's quite incredible. And the final one that I'm throwing in there is Tam O'Brien, because I've been told to. So I've got three divisions covered. But certainly from understanding from our broth, that was one of the huge reasons that they were one of the best teams in League One's ever seen, probably since the undefeated Rangers team, was certainly the defence in there, and a big part of that. So he's in there. So I've got three divisions covered.
Yes. Yes, I have. It's a slight bit of a left field team, because obviously if we all just did the exact same team of the season, they would all look fairly similar, barring one or two. So I've gone with one that's a wee bit more sort of personal to me almost, right? So in goals, I've gone for Mark Gillespie of Motherwell, obviously, because I think Trevor Carson suffering these deep vein thrombosis early in the season, he was a real big, big player for Motherwell, and everybody worried about what would happen when he was out the team, and Mark Gillespie's come in and been every bit as good, if not, I would maybe even say, you could argue that he's a wee bit better than Carson almost, because he's been absolutely unbelievable, and his arrival on the team coincided with when the team really started picking up in the second half of the season. In defence, I've gone for Declan Gallagher at left back, a boy, part of that back three at Livingston that Gamba was talking about there, been really good this season, really. Slightly, aye. Well, obviously, when I was at the game in Saturday, I watched them with a slight bit more attentively. But, yeah, aye, brilliant big player. Big physical, but got a lot of football in him as well. So, yeah, good player, have him in there. Then, centre-back, I've gone for Dedrick Boyata. Because, yes, I know, unlike me, but I'm not Celtic in any way. Got Boyata in there. Obviously, that a tumultuous start to the year with all the controversy around about the AK Athens game and everything, whether he was staying, whether he was going. But then I think, to be honest,
is that why he's not in my team? Am I still bitter?
I'd say so, Gamba. Because ever since he came back in that Hamilton game in the Sunday at Parkhead, and he scored the only goal in a 1-0 win, he's been pretty solid ever since. Obviously, he's away now at the end of the season, as we all thought he would, but I don't think it can be that good that he's been a pretty solid defender for them this year. Partnering him in the back, I've gone with Scott McKenna, as I think both of you left out. A brilliant, brilliant prospect. I don't think he's a... I think in terms of international, he was failed a wee bit with how bad things were going round about him, so he maybe get dragged down a wee bit in terms of international, but a brilliant, brilliant prospect, and has been at the heart of an Aberdeen team that's certainly away from home are still quite solid. Then at right back, I've gone local to me, I've gone Sean Rooney, obviously a boy I know from round about here, done very well, bouncing back from a disappointing spell when it went down to York, didn't quite work out well for him, he's come back well, back into full-time football. Did well at Queen of the South, got his move to Inverness, and he's done brilliant. He starts most weeks, and he's been very solid in there. Had a run out in a Scottish Cup semi-final, so he's in for me, is right back there. Moving into midfield, and out at the left wing, I have Dom Thomas, done very well. Obviously, a contracted Kilmarnock player, since he's gone down to Dumbarton in League One, he's been absolutely unbelievable. Since he went in there, he's been, I think Jim Duffy would tell you himself, he's been one of the best players this year, and he's almost single-handedly at times dragged them through games. His goal ratio as well from out the wing has been absolutely brilliant, and any time I've watched him, he's just looked wonderful, looked like he'd play well above that level. Another wing, I've gone with Annan's Chris Johnson, because again, he's another one that took a bit of a blow after leaving Kilmarnock at such a young age and was tipped to come through in Mini Messi and everything he was called, but he's gone down there, chipped him with lots of assists, lots of goals, played very well in a good Annan team this season, was a nomination for PFA Player of the Year, and I think I would back him to bounce back into full-time football at some point. I've replicated Tom's team in midfield as well. I've gone with David Turnbull. I couldn't possibly leave him out, even though I've tried to make the team a bit different. He's absolutely revolutionised Motherwell this season. Definitely one of, if not the best talent I've ever seen come through our youth system, and he's just got the absolute world at his feet. Do what he want. Next to him, I'm going with Glenn Kamara. I think a very, very shrewd purchase from Rangers. A very poor piece of business with Dundee, almost letting him go. I think we saw at the Old Firm game there just exactly how important he is going to be to this Rangers team. And yeah, just he's a wee sort of left field shout, I would say, for centre mid in there. Up front, not too inspired, I've gone with Lauren Shankland. Obviously, his goals for Ayr have been brilliant. He's been at a few championship teams before Ayr, and he's never really set the header alight, so I don't think there was that much expected of him at the start of the season. But he's nevertheless done absolutely brilliant, and he seems to have a lot of options this summer. And then next to him, I've gone from Wraith's Kevin Nisbet, because he's been an absolute goal machine. Wraith scored quite a lot of goals this season, and you see his name coming up on Jeff Stelling a lot. And that's about me. Honourable mentions must go to James, because if I was doing this just absolutely like the best players of the season, James Forrest would absolutely have to be in there, so would Stephen Dobie.
Quite a decent mix, I suppose.
Yeah. Cheers, just let all my agendas run free. For Sean Rooney to Declan Gallagher to Chris Johnson, just team of my favourites, really.
I assume you've got Mark McGee instilled as manager.
Yes, Mark McGee is manager, absolute certainty.
Mm-hmm.
I can think who I won't have doing the comms as well.
Mm-hmm. The sound you're hearing is Lewis's tears through your earbuds just now.
No, absolutely it's not.
Anyway, do you want to move on? Tom, playoffs.
Yes.
Can we talk a wee bit about the tickets? What is going on with this? There appears to be a wee bit of an urban legend growing about this game, about St Mirren fans purchasing several hundred tickets in the Dundee United end. What has happened? Why has it happened? Why should I be angry? Tell me.
Well, you should be angry for a start. Even before I start speaking, just be angry. So that comes naturally to many, just as I start to move my mouth. Speaking to Connor Park, formerly of this parish, and now currently Falkirk's media man, he was saying that the playoffs, for all they do bring excitement and have probably on the whole been a good thing for, Scottish football, they do pose several problems to football clubs, and particularly in the ticketing department, because they've got two huge games that are generally going to be, particularly this end of the scale, particularly in the Championship, you'd imagine there's going to be at least one big team involved going through it. Recently it's probably been Dundee United before. We've had Hibs and Rangers, and now we've got St Mirren as well. But the problem is you've got two surges for tickets when throughout the season they've not had to deal with this, and I think that probably goes right the way through up to all the teams. When they have to play Celtic and Rangers, there is a demand for tickets that isn't normally there, and that has been seen this week at both clubs. I think St Mirren's, the home tie on Sunday, is probably going to be sell out. It's definitely sell out in the away end, and that's true, or vice versa. It's definitely sell out the away end for Thursday night's game at Tannadice. The problem has come from the fact that the way they've sold the tickets, unlike Aberdeen, who have got a very clear system and it benefits those that go to the matches most regularly, season ticket or not, they've got a loyalty scheme where you get a certain amount of points for going to different games. So I think I've got 4 points on my Aberdeen account, so if anyone's short of a cup final ticket, if they ever get to one again, then they can use my 4 points. Whereas at Dundee United,
tweet us at Burstball Podcast.
Yeah.
Any spares?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Whereas at Dundee United, it's gone to season ticket holders, and I think there's obviously a method to that. They've not just gone get here first and get a ticket, because obviously the people that have paid money in advance do deserve something. And I think that would still exist in this loyalty scheme. You would get, say, 100 points for buying a season ticket, and then 5 points, for example, that everyone else would get for buying a ticket for a game. So if you've got your season ticket, you're very well placed to get these tickets anyway. But what it does do is it punishes other fans who don't have season tickets, and I was thinking, well, I'm one of these because I work a lot of Saturdays all across the country, and I was thinking I might be in a very lonely boat here, in that this is just sour grapes. Student journalists can't get a ticket. Fair enough. I probably would have been on the precipice even in my imaginary loyalty scheme here. But there does seem to be a lot of people who haven't got tickets who not only go to a lot of the games, the majority of games that I know of anyway. There have been people that queued to get tickets on, or the night before the tickets went on sale, that didn't get them. At Tannadice, there was the queue started at 5 o'clock at night for a 9 a.m. release the next morning. So that's that 16 hours. 16 hours they waited in the queue, didn't get anything. The people at 5 o'clock got tickets, but there was people that started queuing at 10:30 at night. So that's still 11 hours overnight, not getting tickets. Not because there were 1,600 people queuing to get tickets in front of them, but because there was people buying multiple tickets at a time with their vouchers that they got from people. And this has led to infighting amongst fans. And it's been justified in that, well, it's going to the United fans. They're not going to be sold at 2-3 times the price that some people have already asked for. I've seen people on a couple of Facebook pages saying they would pay double what they're worth. But that isn't going to be the case. That's their justification. This isn't going to be the case. This is not one of these dodgy ticketing sites buying 90% of tickets and selling them on for pure profit. This is people that couldn't get there, but there are people there that have queued well overnight just to be told, sorry, there isn't any, and seeing people walk past them with 100 tickets in their hands for supporters clubs. And it is disappointing. You do think a neutral venue one-off final would be one solution. The loyalty scheme would maybe be another, but obviously that doesn't meet the demands of the ticket surge, because you'd imagine it'd still be there. One solution, and this was once again what Connor was telling me, was that for the English playoffs, that the league doesn't deal with it. They are sent away to a private company who deal with it, and they've got a floor of people ready to deal with tickets, rather than just a ticket office of three people who are used to doing are used to being very quiet for 3 days of the week, and then there's maybe a bit of an upturn for a game on a Friday and a Saturday. But once again, as I mentioned earlier on, this is probably too much common sense for the governing bodies of Scottish football. But I think the one thing that this final has brought about, there probably will have to be some sort of change. I don't think it'll be as drastic as that they'll revamp it, where we'll go semi-final to the same sort of structure as the Championship and League One playoffs, and we'll play off a one-off final. I think it might just lead the clubs to think a bit more and plan ahead a bit more, because there was every possibility that both these teams would be in this situation 12 weeks ago. Even they knew that this was a possibility. There didn't need to be this rush. Obviously it could just easily have been Ayr, Inverness, Dundee or Hamilton, but that's still quite a small pool of teams to club together and try and figure out one system that could work. But once again, that's just foresight that Scottish football doesn't seem to have at the moment. So there's been quite a lot of furor regarding tickets. But as for on the pitch, it's probably the two sides that neither side wanted. I think either side would have been happier with Hamilton and Inverness, but obviously I think probably the two best sides have got there, so it should be quite an interesting match for the neutral. I think St Mirren are quite an exciting team. They were quite exciting on Saturday anyway, and Dundee United are just anyone's guess. I think they hopefully will turn up, but reminder, it's a TV game, so we just never sure what happens to Dundee United when the cameras are on.
You feel you've got a better chance this year than the last time you were in the playoffs against Hamilton?
I think St Mirren are probably a better side than Hamilton were then, but we've got a lot of better players and a bigger squad, which I think makes a big difference, because the one thing I remember from that playoff, although admittedly I'm stuck in traffic and missed the first half for the final, which is still half more than I'm going to get to watch on Sunday, was that the Dundee United players, because we did have a small squad, and that's something Ray McKinnon said right through the season, you want a small squad, was that they just looked absolutely dead on their feet. And it was going to have to take some sort of freak incident. But it could have been totally different if the referee had not sent off Simon Murray for diving and given the penalty that he should have had. But that's for a different podcast.
Mm.
Not be revisiting ancient history.
Right, well, it's certainly, Lewis, some kind of neutral, in quotation marks, point of view. How do you see it going?
Well, I think in these playoffs, I generally do tend to favour the side who are coming down. I would probably slightly favour St Mirren. I would think overall, having watched the two teams, I agree with what Tom says. Dundee United are pretty erratic. You just never know what they're going to show you. But I don't know, if you lined up both teams next to each other, you would maybe even be tempted. You'd probably say maybe Dundee United are the better team, to be honest. But I just think with the, you know, St Mirren have been playing in the top flight all season, and you think there's fine margins between these games. But I think, as we have seen a few times in these playoffs, obviously Motherwell Rangers jumps out at me, Kilmarnock Falkirk jumps out at me. I think the experience of having played in the top flight all year against your Hearts, Hibs, Aberdeen, Celtic, Rangers, or the rest of it, I think that actually does show in these games. And sometimes I wouldn't even necessarily say quality, because Dundee United have got a really good team, but sometimes their experience of these games and their game management just shows and gives them the advantage. I think I would back St Mirren to stay up, yeah.
Interesting. It'll be interesting to see how it goes. We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about the cup final on our next podcast, which will hopefully, we won't give a date for when that'll be, because we don't want to say it'll be 2 weeks and then it's not 2 weeks from now. Lads, is there anything else we need to cover, or have we kind of covered everything we were looking to today? Is there anything else we need to go over?
Well, I think we've got plenty off our chest.
Right, good stuff. Good
time
stuff.
For the quiz.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Tom.
The music for the quiz is still in the studio at the moment. We're
studio.
Yeah. We're trying to make it as grand as the quiz deserves. So you've got to bear with us there. Hopefully for the new season, we're going to lay down the track. You've got some big names working behind the scenes to get it sorted.
I'm sure we'll find something on the Creative Commons section on YouTube. Don't worry.
But I think it is time for everyone's favourite part of the podcast, right. The quiz. As always, the bidding process, I'll go over it again just in case you've got any new listeners. That the way it is, I'll ask a question, basic for a quiz, I think. And then I'll ask, firstly today, I'll ask Andrew Gamba how many he thinks he could get of the answers. So there's multiple answers today, there's 8 answers. So Gamba will say, I think I could get 4. Then I'll ask Lewis if he can go higher. Fair enough. He just needs to name 5. If he can't, he needs to get Gamba to name them. So fairly simple, very exciting, and we shall wait for the TV spin-off to start soon. So, Gamba, I shall ask you first: how many you think you can name of the managers that have got their sides promoted from the Championship to the Premiership since the SPFL started? So we've got 8 managers here.
Okay, I'd go 4 then.
4, nice. Lewis Birrell, do you think you can name 5, or would you like Gamba to name 4 of the managers who got their sides promoted from the Championship to the SPFL Premiership since the SPFL began?
I think I could name 5.
You think you can name 5? Okay, and there's an asterisk beside 1 here. The most recent... There's obviously a duo. I don't think I'm giving too much away here. That counts as 1 answer.
All right, okay.
Okay. So you're still going to go for 5?
Yeah, I'll go with 5.
Okay. Lewis Burrell, could you name me 5 managers who've got their sides promoted from the Championship to the Premiership, please?
Okie doke. I'll start with Davy Irons. Gretna. Is that right? Are you giving me anything?
This is... very much unprecedented, and for the first ever time since we've introduced the quizzes, wrong.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Alright, I'll go again. Oh, aye, right enough, because they sacked their manager on the first day up, didn't they? Aye, of course. Never mind.
A reminder, this is since the SPFL was introduced.
Yes, since the oh, right. So what year are we talking?
2012-13, is that right?
Christ.
Definitely not since Gretna have...
Right.
Cease to exist as a club.
Paul Hartley.
Well, Hartley's correct, but I'm afraid you're just playing for pride here since you've lost.
Oh, have I lost? All right.
Yeah, because you got it wrong. There was no wrong answers allowed.
Oh, well. Jack Ross. I know. Sin. Absolute sin. Oh, well.
Gamba, you've won that quiz out of Lewis's shambolic performance by default. First time that's happened to the quiz. And I, for one, I'm disappointed. This is the negative side of this sort of quiz. But thank you very much both for playing. Less so, Lewis, for just bringing the quiz into disrepute. So we'll just hand back to Gamba in the studio.
Right, yes, and I believe that is everything that we need to cover. So thank you very much to Tom McKinnon for joining me, Lewis Burrell, and Callum Scott. Thank you so much to everyone, and we will speak to you soon. Take care. Bye-bye.